Welcome to the Isaka Podcast. On today's She Leads Tech Series edition of the podcast, we're joined by Kelly McElhaney, professor at the Haas School of Business at the University of California, Berkeley, and founding director at the Center for Equity, Gender, and Leadership. Kelly, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Jay. It's my pleasure.
To start out, what do you consider to be the main benefits of gender diversity, particularly at the board level and leadership levels?
Sure. There is a lot of data out there that talks about the benefits of gender and diversity at the board level, at the leadership level, and really at the decision-making tables. I could put them into three kind of categories. The first are studies that show correlations between having gender diversity in those positions and positive financial return for the company. Things like return on income, return on equity, total return on sales, really just the data that is correlated between having gender equity at the table, at the decision-making leadership table, and a better financial performance at the firm level. The second category really links into innovation and better collective decision-making, which is pretty obvious. The more different lived experiences you have sitting at a decision-making table, the different diversity, levels of gender, ethnicity, race, you're going to get more innovative solutions. You're going to have a more collectively intelligent decision made because de facto you're bringing different lenses into the process. So the third level of benefits that we see when you have diverse teams at the leadership table is in the area of talent, whether that's access to talent, because diverse individuals, women particularly, if you can't see yourself at the leadership table, you feel that you can't be it. You can't become that. So really, firms who show diversity at the leadership tables, at the board, at the leadership C-suite level, will de facto attract a more diverse workforce. And attraction is not the only component there. It's also retention. So if I can see myself reflected in decisions that are being made at the top, I'm more likely to want to stay at that company. Turns out that millennials will report that diversity and inclusion is a really important factor for their decisions to stay at a company and to become highly engaged, and it's linked to their satisfaction.
What are some ways that enterprise leaders can better convey those benefits?
As much as I would like to have a really clear and simple answer of it's simply the right thing to do to include everyone, I don't find that that's always the most effective starting point. So I will go back and cite the hardcore quantitative data around, first of all, financial return to the company, because at the end of the day, companies cease to exist if they're not producing a positive financial return, and that's what we get measured on for the most part in our business leadership roles. I start with a very strong data-based case around the three areas that I just talked to you about. I like to be very honest and upfront because while we all say that we like numbers and that logic persuades us, we're really quick to try to find holes in the business case. So we need to say up front, right now, the studies show correlation, not necessarily causality. Part of the problem is that when my data set of having, for example, 6% of Fortune 500 in the United States CEOs being women, if I already have a small N or a small data set, I can't run robust statistics to show causality. What's interesting to me is so much happens in the business world. For example, brand and marketing and innovation and things that companies spend a significant amount of resources on, where there is also just a correlative proof to positive business return. It's not causal. So I just try to liken diversity and inclusion to lots of other things that companies, without thinking, spend a lot of money and time on. But I also do believe that we as human beings are persuaded by the less logical case, but more of the emotional case of, do you want to be working at a place in which you do see yourself at the top? I really try to drive it home to the individual level after I start with the business case of the benefits to the company. So I use a mix of kind of the logical and the emotional argument, and it generally works, particularly if I start with the logical side first.
What are some of the common miscalculations made in the approach that organizations take?
I see a lot of leaders react to pain, so they get called out from something that has happened in a negative way, showing lack of commitment to diversity and inclusion. So they just really quickly react, out elevating a couple 100,000 feet to say, look, this is about business. This is not, we're going to hire a chief diversity and inclusion officer because we were on the front page of the New York Times in a negative way. So one is to elevate it up into why is this important for me as a leader, if I'm speaking out as a board member or the leader? And number two, why is this important for business? So it really is kind of trying to move into more proactive mode as opposed to reactive mode. I also see a lot of companies fail at this because they'll start out with the mandatory, which is now becoming you need to do mandatory unconscious bias training. And when you start from that perspective or that kind of entrance point, it's not really effective because if somebody's going to tell me something is mandatory and that I am unconscious and biased, I don't come to the table with a very positive, you know, mindset. And then the third piece where I see these initiatives or these strategies fail is actually to not deal with the courageous conversations. So I just happened to me yesterday, I was giving a talk on this. An individual raised their hand pretty early on in the talk and said, look, I think white men are losing out on leadership positions right now because we're immediately going to the more diverse candidate. I was really happy he made that comment because I was pretty certain that that was on other people's minds as well. And when it's on your mind and it's not addressed publicly and openly, you're going to not really be receptive to the rest of the discussion. So encouraging courageous conversations and debate is really critical. It's scary, but I think it's absolutely critical.
Is there a certain starting point that really needs to be in place before real progress can be made?
Well, we've talked about two things, so I'll just mention them and go on to the third thing. One is that it needs to be a mandate from leadership, so from the board, from the CEO. Often these things will start lower down in the organization more organically, which is has its own strengths, but if it's not part of the leadership mandate, it's going to hit a sort of glass ceiling or at least hard ceiling, if you will. And we've already talked about starting with the business case. But beyond that, we have to understand what the challenges and opportunities are unique to each organization. You can't understand what your challenges and opportunities are if you don't know where you stand. So collecting data is really critical. And there are companies who are fearful of, I don't want to know the data. There's a lot of risk. What if people find out? You have to start with collecting data to really understand what you're working with. And then when I advise companies to collect data, you also have to be willing to go transparent with that data, at least with the leadership team, because there's a lot of level of lack of awareness or thinking that happens out there, but that doesn't happen inside this company.
Are you sensing real headway being made in the way that organizations are prioritizing and approaching gender diversity in leadership roles?
I think there's progress on the conversation side of prioritizing gender diversity, particularly in leadership roles. I think two things are happening in reality. At the actual leadership discussion table when the rubber meets the road, so to speak. I'm not convinced this remains a top priority as much as it is stated in the language of a company's leadership. And I think the second challenge here is companies are over-focusing or over-indexing on diversity, which is the numbers. So counting heads, we have 3 out of 12 females sitting at our board table. Counting heads is necessary but insufficient. It's really about inclusion, which is making those heads count. So in fact, if those 3 women sitting around a board table of 12 individuals aren't feeling like their voice is heard or their opinion counts, then that's not going to be effective overarchingly to see the positive business benefits that I discussed earlier.
How challenging is it to measure that meaningful inclusion that you indicated is so important?
There are 2 very easy metrics from which to start, and companies are generally probably already measuring or collecting this data. They just aren't triangulating it back to diversity and inclusion. The first is to look at retention rates. So it's one thing to say we've increased our number of women in this particular industry, company, or department. But if in fact, and often in the tech sector, this is true, they're leaving at faster rates, then you know that you are not focusing on the inclusion side of the balance. The second thing is to look at your employee satisfaction surveys and add a question around, do I feel like my voice is heard? Do I feel like my opinion counts? Then you'll start to get at measuring inclusion, and companies are already measuring these 2 areas anyway.
What about the particular challenges faced by industries that traditionally have been very male-dominated, such as IT and information security?
Yeah, for sure, IT and information security and such similar industries do have a pipeline problem. You can't deny that you have fewer women going into academic studies at the college level around IT and information security. So companies do need to reach down and try to get more at the root of the problem as opposed to Band-Aids and understand the true cause. So partnering with K-12 institutions to make IT a desirable path for women, partner with universities. There's a lot they can do there. I'm not convinced if we are able to raise the number of women, say, at a company like Cisco or Apple, it shows that it's not as much of a pipeline. I think we get stuck in the excuse of, hey, there aren't enough women out there. What are you doing to both build the pipeline, but also attract, retain, and improve the satisfaction of women who are already out there? I also think areas like IT and information security, this has to be a 24/7 endeavor. They can't just do this during recruiting season. They have to understand what are they doing every single day within their own culture, with the partnerships they establish. They have to be completely and always intentional about elevating women inside of their companies. It's not sort of a, we're going to do this once a year because it's International Women's Month and we're going to focus on why this matters. What are you doing every single day? What are you doing Monday morning?
Let's end on a positive note. What gives you the most hope about the direction that we're headed on gender diversity?
I really tend to adhere towards the amplification model of change management. So we as a world are really good at criticizing and calling out all that's negative or all that companies aren't doing. There are a lot of companies who are very committed towards gender equity, maybe aren't moving as quickly as I would like to see them move, but we do have to amplify the positive. It tends to create psychological human change when you amplify the positive, the sort of concept of positive psychology. So I really like to focus on what are the opportunities and solutions as opposed to continuing to point to the problems. I think another thing it's important to focus on here is the fact that it's a journey. It's not a race. So this change, again, while I'd like to see it happen faster, it's going to continue to change over my lifetime, surely. It's not an excuse to stay at a slow pace, but incremental change over time leads to change, and we just have to be realistic about that.
Kelly, thank you so much for your sharp insights on the program today.
Thanks, Jay, for the opportunity. I appreciate it.
That's all the time we have for now. For more on ISACA's She Leads Tech program, visit sheleadstech.isaca.org.